Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really amazing founder, a bootstrapped founder. You know, he hasn't raised any money, but here's the deal. He's built his company to over 400 employees and 150 million in top line revenue. So talk about impressiveness here. We're going to be talking about his story, how he went about doing it. Also, we're going to be talking about how really to go about running a business that is fully bootstrapped, thinking about sustainability, as well as how they've gone about building their culture too, no? Again, you know, building, scaling, financing, you know, not that much, but we're going to be talking about bootstrapping it, all the good stuff that we like to hear. So brace yourself for a very inspiring discussion. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Rupesh Sanghavi. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Alejandro, for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So born in India, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up over there?
Oh, it was amazing. It's literally how I would say how other side of the world lives, literally and physically. From driving on the different side of the road to flipping a switch on the different side of the plate. I think it was growing up in India was quite an exciting time. It was a pre-internet, pre-touch phone era. We grew up in a very competitive environment. Like most of us were not blessed with a lot of resources. So we had to become a very creative with the resources that we had. And I'm very thankful for the way I grew up in India.
So then let's talk about, obviously, in your case, I mean, in India, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of cultural pressure to study, to become either a doctor or an engineer. I mean, in your case, it was an engineer. So you actually went into engineering school. But like you say, you know, your mother was India and your father was the U.S. So at what point does the mother and the father meet?
That's fantastic. So yeah, I mean, I grew up in India, like in a very limited visibility environment. I perhaps learned to move my mouse, like I moved the mouse on the computer perhaps first time in 99. So at a very limited resources growing up. But I mean, what changed my world and my trajectory is that I applied for some universities in United States for master's in Texas A&M University invited me to do master's from there. And here is the kicker, absolute 100% scholarship. And on top of it, they gave me some additional compensation or money to just study, stay and study there. I was just blown. Like, no matter, US is one of the greatest country on this earth, is because of what they do and how they treat foreigners. There are not many cultures that they do that. I've been to more than 100 countries traveling myself, but I've never seen a country as generous and as open as US. So that is how I think of US. I was fortunate to do my master's from Texas A&M and within 18 months, and then found my first job in California doing simulation engineering for a company called Wonderware.
And how was it like coming here to the US, you know, the land of opportunity? How was it?
Oh, my. Then you're taking me to some very happy memories. I mean, even if I had to pick 1 year of my entire life, like perhaps the first 12 months that I was in United States was my happiest year of my life, I must say that. With very limited resources, new country, new everything, but just life was a fantastic year at that time. Fortunately, given that we grew up in a very competitive environment, I felt that study here was a breeze. I mean, I was able to score 4.0 in A&M. I was able to work 20 hours a week, was still cooking, running house for the first time. Because in India, doing bachelor's, I lived with my parents. I mean, it was, believe it or not, it was as common as the school student living with the parents at that time. So I was never by myself, and here everything changed here and changed for better. So I had a fantastic experience, great professor, great thinking, and super good culture.
So that's pretty amazing. Now, in your case, you know, you ended up going into the corporate world, and you did that for close to 6 years. You know, it's like you were waiting for something to happen. You know, what do you think needed to happen? Because at what point did that whole entrepreneurial thing started to incubate in you?
Now thinking back, see, perhaps I did not even knew the full meaning of what it likes to be an entrepreneur. Maybe even I'm learning today. But I can tell you this, that I used to do some small gigs all the time, like selling some stuff, kind of doing some service jobs. I was a tinkerer. What kick-started me was... While buying a book for my wife, I realized that there is a book I can buy for $50, less than $50, and sell it for $1,600. That too instantly, zero wait time. So I took the plunge, did the transaction, and it kind of got me hooked. Once I realized that it's just not for money, but the amount of opportunity in e-commerce at that time sounded enormous, and that got me hooked then and there.
So then obviously you started doing this on the side, you know, for a little bit. And what was that moment where you were like, hey, I think that it's time to get this thing done?
Great. So yeah, I mean, like once I sort of realized what I kind of stumbled on or what really my calling, I just started spending time as in when I could. Work was my still first priority. I still continue to rank 4 or 5 on 5 of 5 scale. So I was doing very well on the job. But then I realized at one point that, look, I mean, I can only go so far. I mean, my real calling is entrepreneurship. And that's when I took a plunge. And that's when I sort of, started doing this full time.
So then let's talk about that moment where you were like, okay, I'm going to go for this. I mean, how nerve-wracking was when you gave your, you know, notice and you went at this, you know, on your own for the first time?
You're magical, Alejandro. You're taking me to the right spot and right time. Let me tell you this. I walked to my manager at least 3 times and like with the full intent of resigning from the job, from giving that notice. Could not do it. It was the 4th time that was a charm. My boss really thought something weird is off because I would just walk up to him, change my mind at the last minute, talk something about project or something else, and then just walk back. Maybe a week or two later, I'll do the same thing. Until 4th time when I gathered enough courage to tell him and that's it. I mean, he tried to retain me. He tried to tell me that like, look, you will have a better future here, which of course I respected it. But then at that time, I stood my ground and decided to step out.
So then let's talk about the early days. What were the early days like, you know, of really pushing the company, pushing Airgoat? I mean, what were those early days like?
Oh, early days was a fun. I mean, talk about transformation into business. I felt like for first 6 months or so, first few years, I thought that we are changing business model or evolving business model every 3 to 6 months. So there was a constant tinkering and constant fine tuning of exactly what we want to do. And it is almost like when you tinker with the ongoing business, it's almost like changing a tire while car is in motion. So it was not easy, but it was a lot of fun. Few other things, from chemical engineer, we started selling books, even though Right now, books are less than 2% of what we do. But at that time, we started selling books. So imagine a person doing a very well in chemical engineering, chemical plus computer science, and suddenly you start selling books. So like, I mean, even if I tell my friends or family that I'm doing this full time, their next question was, how would you support yourself? I mean, implying that, would you even make enough money to support yourself compared to where you were? And I did not understand working capital. I did not understand profitability. There was no sophisticated system, at least not that I know of. I mean, I did not add a exposure to it. So I was even wondering that, have I done the right thing? Because I did not realize that I'm reinvesting all the profits at that time back into business. So I was like, I was just buying more items to sell. And I did not realize that, hey, I'm making this invisible money. I thought like, oh, I don't know why I'm working so hard and not making money. So those were the earlier days. I was everything from strategy to accountant to cleaning the room to shipping the books. Everything was done by me. It was quite an interesting, exciting period now when I look back.
So then for the people that are listening to get it, what ended up being the business model of Hergoat? How do you guys make money?
So at the moment, our vision is to transform great American brands from a physical retailing world to digital landscape. Now, from physical to digital involves a lot of work, because that is what we do. We work with various businesses and brands, and we buy their products and we sell their products online, and we help them grow. So we help brand grow not as an agency but as a retailer, as their retailing partner. And as and when, if we see a mutual opportunity to acquire the businesses that we are working with, either business is ready to exit for some reason, or we see a potential to work together, we also acquire that business and become 100% owner of that brand. So we have acquired 15 businesses in last 3 years, and we work with over 500 brands as a reselling partner. So essentially, we either help you grow your brand or we help you continue the survival of the brand for many, many years or decades to come.
Hey, guys. So pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
And we'll talk about the acquisitions in just a bit. But one of the things that strikes me here is, I mean, you guys have built a really meaningful business. Why didn't you guys ever think about raising external money? Because I'm sure that you've had like all types of people knocking on your door, you know, for helping you with giving you money or with whatever that was.
Absolutely. So up until 2020, up until pandemic, we were doing, we are still doing an amazing job that we have been a cash flow positive. We have all the working capital has come out of our profitability over many years. And because of that, we never needed a cash to run our business, because our cash flow cycle was always positive in terms of we get paid before, we get paid much faster thanks to our ranking and relation with some of the major marketplaces like Walmart, Amazon, where they pay us much faster than they pay to any other sellers. So because of that, we never needed a money. After 2020, when we started acquisition business, at that time, yes, we needed a lot of upfront cash. And up until by the time we ran out of our own cash to invest into brand, we realized that, and actually we started thinking about raising money. But then by the time we ran out of our own cash to buy brands, we realized that those cash comes with a lot of conditions. And those conditions may limit our growth to an extent. So that's why we continue to focus primarily on growing the brands, growing the profitability, growing the vendors that we work with, rather than being distracted by more brands. And because of those profitability reasons and that staying independent as long as we could led us to not explore we have had many unsolicited inquiry to invest into our business. We have said no so far, and as we acquire more brands in the future, we are open to it. But for now, we are doing well.
So then let's talk about the acquisitions, no? So sure. At what point does the whole idea of growing inorganically via acquisitions, at what point does that come as an option? Because, it sounds like now you guys have built more of an assembly line on the way that you're able to plug those in and put them under the umbrella. So at what point does that idea come knocking? And then how have you guys gone about really building that assembly line to ensuring that integration, of those transactions end up being a success?
Absolutely. So that's a key word, Alejandro, very well said. So we have built an assembly line. The base part about is that because of the more than 1.5 decades of experience, we knew, even when we acquired brand, we were doing, even when we were not owner of the brand. So it became very natural for us that now we have something of our own. We kind of take an extra care. So we always have perfected and mastered this assembly line concept, where we have a team of 450 people who do everything from search engine optimization to digital marketing to customer service to research and analysis to create a social media. Everything is done in hours. And because of that strong team, when we added, and the one part I should say that when we add brands, when we acquire company, we typically want to see that their manufacturing is not in-house. So I would like to see they get their manufacturing, they have a manufacturing done from an outside, either somewhere in Asia or Mexico or even United States, but the manufacturing cannot be in-house. So that is what we have focused on. So when we acquired brands, we primarily focus on growing product lines. We focus on growing top lines and so on. We usually typically don't get bogged down by manufacturing at this point.
So then in that case, let's talk about how you guys have gone about people, right? You obviously, those acquisitions are all about people too. And now, as you said, you have over 400 employees. What is it like, you know, to be an employee of Ergode, and what are some of those values that you guys have built the culture on?
Brilliant. Thank you. So I think, I mean, I'm fortunate to have my first job in California. And imagine a culture of California in early 2000, when company would give you almost a resort treatment inside the company, and they will encourage you from every perspective. So I'm fortunate to have spent those years in California, where they would give me unlimited access to any training courses, access to gym, various programs, foods, perks, stuff like that. I have not worked anywhere other than the United States. So I've taken those values and those thinking back to my team. Our team is spread all over the world. We have some in Japan, some in quite a few in India, some in Philippines, some in United States. So our employees or our people who work with us are all over the world. Now, we whatever is practical, we offer them as a motivation and compensation. There are 8 different ways in which we compensate employee in terms of various sports rewards, to obviously monthly compensation, to earnouts, to incentives, to all kinds of stuff that we offer in terms of compensation. They have unlimited access to any course, and company reimburses for them. Then we have a program. Then we provide ESOP. Even though as an independent company, we don't have to give away equity, but we have chosen to give ESOP, that is a little stock in our company, to all the employees. And why that? Because my one of the fire goal is to create 500 millionaires. And I know we can do it if we continue to be on the path we are on. So with such small equity, I think we can have a lot of people benefiting from ESOP. And then we have a programs like MGAF. We have a programs like Token of Appreciation. In one of the interesting programs that I can say is that in Token of Appreciation, we have a clay chips made with the name Ergode. And we actually give out that chips to somebody who is performing well or who has performed well on given day. And then every week they get some awards, and starting from smartphone to who knows, all kinds of awards we give out. So those things keeps employee engaged. Of course, we celebrate a lot of festivals. We celebrate birthdays. We have all-end meetings. All those perks are part of working in Ergode.
That's amazing. So then I want to ask you something here then. Imagine if you were to go to sleep tonight, and you wake up in a world where the vision of the company is fully realized. What does that world look like?
Great, great question. So one is that I would like to see that we have worked with at least 100 brands. We have some great brand story that I'll get to later. But some of the brands that we have saved from oblivion is quite an amazing. So maybe 100 plus of those stories that we are fully capable of executing is my goal. Second is about this 500 million, 500, creating a 500 plus millionaires. It may not be much, but being a millionaire in some part of the world still means a lot. And I would love to see that everybody who has been working with us gets benefit from this generous output. I know that money cannot solve all the problems, but definitely it helps to alleviate some of the problems. The third goal in my mind is to be a net exporter of the products from United States. Right now, I mean, as a US, we export lot of stuff, but not so much into this retail era. But I think our products, the brands that we have acquired are from United States, and we can actually, right now, our international sales are less than 20%, but I think we can easily grow that to 50-60%. And that would be my vision, to see that our American ideas, American products becomes popular worldwide.
So we're talking about the future here, but I want to talk about the past and with a lens of reflection, because, I mean, you've been at it now for close to 15 years, which is obviously, you know, building a company 15 years is like in corporate, that would be like 200 years, no, in dog years, right? I mean, absolutely unbelievable. So imagine I was to put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time, you know, maybe to that moment where, you know, you were now giving your notice, you know, there in Invensys, and there you were like having the opportunity of having a chat with that younger Rupesh, and you're able to give your younger self one piece of advice. What would that be, and why, you know, that piece of advice for launching a business, given what you know now?
Fantastic. I think as much as we adopted technology early on, I think we did not do enough. There is no reason we could not have become another Amazon size company at that time, only if we had focused more on technology. So the way I think about now is that every company is sort of a technology company with that application in different areas like healthcare, finance, retail, who knows, right? So I think if I had invested more time into technology, I think we would have been even much better off. So, I mean, if there is a one advice, yes, technology. Second, maybe I think a lot of time it's a persistence, because entrepreneurship is not about all the glory days when I get recognized, rewarded, or I feel a sense of pride in creating a team of the size we have. Okay, there are a lot of hard days that I have to live through, and persevering through those hard days when situation is tight, when we are in a problem of not our own making, it is hard to go through those days. But hey, we just have to persevere through this. So I think technology on the technology on the doing side and perseverance on the mindset side is what I can share with the younger myself.
So for the people that are listening, you know, that would love to reach out and say hi, Rupesh, what is the best way for them to do so?
LinkedIn is the bestest way. I'm on text message, WhatsApp message as well. But LinkedIn, I'm sure we can easily my name is Rupesh Sanghvi. So you can just find me there. And I do respond to every message on LinkedIn.
Easy enough. Well, Rupesh, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Alejandro. Thank you for having me. And it's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.